From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Freight train traffic is increasing across the country. In Wisconsin, rail companies are investing in track improvements in different parts of the state. In La Crosse, a track expansion running through the Forest Hills Golf Course and residential neighborhood is facing some resistance. Here today to talk about the trains in La Crosse are La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot and La Crosse County Board Supervisor Maureen Friedland. We invited someone from BNSF Railway to join in this conversation, and they declined.
I'm wondering if we can just first get an idea of freight in La Crosse. There are two freight rail lines that come through. One's owned by Canadian Pacific, and that more or less travels from east-west, west-east. And then there's the BNSF line that runs north to south. And this is the line that there's going to be a four-mile stretch that they're looking to upgrade. Mayor, I'm wondering if you can talk about kind of the story behind this upgrade.
Well, just to touch a little bit on, you know, the railroad in La Crosse, and the railroad is one of our foundational industries here. I mean, it was really for the development, our location on the rivers and then the expansion of the railroad that is why La Crosse is here. So it's got part of our culture, part of our history, which I think is very important. And I know that between BNSF and CP Rail, you know, there's several hundred jobs here in La Crosse. So it is important from an economic standpoint. And I know also from just the standpoint of efficiencies, when you're looking at environmental impacts and everything else, to ship items, you know, safely, underline the safely part, but to ship things via the railroad versus hauling it over the road or, you know, some of those other methods, pipelines or whatever, it's very efficient to do that through the rail. So we've had and enjoyed a long history here in La Crosse with the railroad. I do think what we're seeing now, though, obviously, is the sort of the, you know, we're caught up here in the global and national scale here in Little La Crosse because of the huge increase in shipping oil via railroad that's happened just over the last several years. And what that has done to rail lines and communities all across the country, and the fact that BNSF has a, you know, a little less than a four-mile stretch basically from State Road to their yard on the north side where it goes from two lines down to one line. And that's caused them a bottleneck, as they've explained. It causes them to have to stack trains and, you know, do a lot more switching and those kinds of things versus having that second line. So we're seeing it here in La Crosse, that huge demand from the national level of the Bakken crude oil and everything else, and just, you know, what that's doing to us here.
And so they want to add the second line to just help reduce that bottleneck.
Yeah, I think that's what we've heard from the railroad, is that that second line allows them to move things more efficiently. I think it's not difficult to imagine that with that second line, we'll also see increased rail traffic. I mean, I think now we're, 60 to 70 cars per day. I don't think it takes much to imagine that we'll be probably over 100 cars a day with that second line, because, again, it's going to just make things operate more efficiently.
When we say 60 cars a day, does that refer to 60 separate trains, or are we looking at each car that's attached to an engine?
It would be 60 trains per day, and each the ones that, because I live on the east side of the tracks and I get caught at least probably once or twice a day, and I know that that's going to increase in the future, but there's 100 plus cars on each one of those trains.
And Maureen, you live on that part of town also, and this is something that you've been closely watching as it's evolved.
Right. I do live near the tracks, but the issue is an issue that affects the entire city, and not just the people who are near the tracks. The tracks are really in everyone's backyard, because we know that in the expansion area, just in the expansion area, there's over 8,500 homes that – excuse me, 8,500 people that would be affected in the half mile from either side of the train tracks. That's the – that's the area that the DOT looks at for evacuation and for emergencies. That's also the area that was affected by the big explosion in the Quebec area. So that's – we've looked to see how many people are affected. In fact, in the entire county, 20%, about 20% of the entire county lives within half a mile of the railroad tracks. And that comes to about 25,000 people. So there's really a lot of people affected by the amount of trains that are going through and the safety of the trains as they're going through.
And one of the issues that I don't believe has been resolved yet is who owns this land, who owns a chunk of the land where they want to expand. Can you talk about that issue, Mayor? Have you all figured out whether or not the city owns the land or if BNSF owns the land, especially running through the golf course there?
Yes, we have a difference in this matter. The city feels that we own the property, and it's on the golf course. And if you've golfed at Forest Hills, basically where the two crossings are, where the carts to go across the tracks, there's a rectangular piece that incorporates both of those crossings, where we feel that the city owns that property. BNSF argues that they own the property. And our thinking is that the city installed those crossings because we own the property and didn't have to get anybody's permission to assist with our golf course operation. We're working on a title search right now. We started that a couple weeks ago. It typically takes 4 to 6 weeks to sort out those issues, and especially with the fact that it's railroad property or, you know, disputed railroad property. I mean, we're going back to like the 1840s or 50s, I believe, with that search. And I know that BNSF is also doing their title work as well. So once we, that search on both sides will tell us, I guess, the next steps if it is shown, in fact, that we own the property versus the railroad, and we'll go from there.
So what would happen if the city owns it?
Actually, we're doing some research through our city attorney's office. If the city owns the property, we have certain rights and certain legal protections. And I don't know all of the details just because that's something that we're looking into. But in essence, the city, you cannot condemn city land for right of way, so to speak. Or if that is part of a process, there's considerations that have to be given. So I think the long story short, if the city owns the land and we can show that we legally own it, that gives us more opportunity to impact what's going on. Again, I don't know to the extent of those impacts, but it will be clear that if it's city property, the city has to be involved with the project.
And if it's BNSF property?
Then I think it's more along the lines of BNSF will move forward. They'll continue with the project. I think we still have obviously some very critical inputs into what's going on, because a second line will make the golf course operation practically impossible. There are several crossings where we have invested dollars to keep the quiet zone through the city, not to mention, as what Maureen was saying earlier, just the impacts to neighborhoods and the vibrations and the increased traffic. And we're looking at all those issues because it's obviously very critical to the city in our neighborhood efforts as well.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about freight train traffic in the La Crosse area. My guests are La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot and La Crosse County Board Supervisor Maureen Friedland. Mayor Cabot, as you said, if the second line goes through, it would have a huge impact on the golf course. Could it still be usable?
The answer to that is no. What I've learned from our parks director is that if a second line goes in, the delays and the disruption that would cause would in essence make the operation, be impossible, because you couldn't, as a part of what BNSF wants to do, is they want to close both of the at-grade crossings and to create a bridge so that golf courts and golf carts and pedestrians could get from the west to the east and vice versa. But to have two trains and 100 trains a day would make it very difficult for somebody to try to, tee off and then have to wait. it would have severe impacts to that overall operation. That's one of the challenges, of course. You know, it's been several years now, the city working with Kemper, that operation is now profitable after considerable controversy about having to take that over and all the things that happened a few years ago. Kemper managing that now makes it a profitable operation. So that's, you know, cause for some distress on our municipal budget and our operations. We're researching to see what the cost might be if we could relocate the entire operation to the east side of the tracks. There's also some other issues. If that is dedicated parkland, the city cannot just sell that, or we cannot just provide that. There has to be, you know, the courts get involved, because once it's dedicated parkland, it has an additional level of protection, if you will. So that's another issue that we're researching.
And beyond the golf course, Maureen, as you were talking about before, one of the biggest concerns is how this could affect the neighborhoods.
Right. We've identified a number of issues. For example, at a recent GENA meeting, that's the Grandview Emerson Neighborhood Association, we asked the people the question there of the effect of closing Hixson in the natural environment, what it would mean to them. And we found out that it was really a great factor for the neighborhoods and for the people who live there. That's part of the reason that they purchased their homes in that area. And we're not talking about just west of Losey Boulevard. We're talking east of Losey Boulevard. Also, even going as far as Goosetown, people are concerned about this. People also feel the vibrations from that far away. And people have great concerns about the marsh. The people in the region depend on or look to the Hixson Forest and the natural environment to cross the tracks, to go to work, to go to their activities. And the marsh and the river are very priceless to us. I do want to say that I support the efficiency of the railroad line, and the relief of bottlenecks are important. But it's the increase in the number of trains that we're concerned about. This goes beyond just efficiency of getting the trains going back and forth. And we're concerned about a river environmental disaster that would affect river commerce for Wisconsin, for Minnesota. We're concerned about the fish and wildlife habitats, the tourism effect of problems on the river. We believe that what we need is to be doing more architectural review to look at ways to reduce noise and vibration while preserving the neighborhood aesthetics. Also, we'd like to see the state of the art of the construction beds looked at to minimize vibration and noise. More so, we'd like to see more of a budget to study the road situation to minimize travel time for emergency responders and commuters. And there are some particular marsh concerns that we have that are very important to us.
So that was, you know, a good list of some of the concerns. Let's touch on the marsh concerns first. You said that the county has been working with BNSF on the lines running through the marsh. Can you explain, I guess, maybe the concerns there and if some of those permits have anything to do with those concerns?
Okay. The county has two permits that it has to issue for this to proceed. The DNR also has permits that will be involved. And there are some questions about whether federal rules can preempt what the county wants or not. Those are technical issues that are going to be resolved. What we're particularly concerned about in the marsh is that we learned from our emergency responders that we have a limited ability to deploy spill booms in the marsh. So if we have spills or leakage, it will be difficult to clean that area up and to protect the water. Oil could reach the storm and the sanitary sewer systems. That's a river concern as well as a marsh concern. So the question with the marsh is, are bulldozers going to come in, or can we preserve the habitat, replace the drains area? How is this going to be done? Will the drained areas be replaced? We know that some areas will be drained and mitigation has to take place someplace. We'd like to see the mitigation take place in the marsh rather than in another community through credits or something like that. We have needs in the marsh that could be attended to, hydrology improvements that could be made. We could use a plan to work on the invasives that we have there. We've read in the reports, it's a little bit unclear to me, but it looks like there may be three new bridges that are added. I'm not quite sure if they're new or reconstructed, but it looks like there's three new bridges that need to be added to do that extra track going through, as well as an access road or a service road from Gillette to River Valley Drive. So we're not sure how that's going to be done.
Would these bridges be in the marsh or they'd be elsewhere in La Crosse?
This is in the marsh, right. We're concerned about disturbing the habitat. We have certain birds there that need to be protected. We have something like 75% of a certain kind of crane that comes through that's in the river area. 75% of the North American canvasbacks migrate on the Mississippi Flyway. So we're most concerned about the effects in the marsh of draining more area. And even if the hydrology reports show that the flood levels are not expected to rise, we still have concerns about that.
You both mentioned that with this second track, you predict that there will be an increase in traffic. And other people have said that too. BNSF says, and I should mention that we invited them to be a part of this program, but they did not respond to our interview request. But in an email, they said that if they double the lines of traffic through La Crosse, it doesn't mean that traffic's doubling, but they'll just be able to move through more efficiently. But, you know, you all say that, no, we will see more traffic.
Well, I can refer you to some reports such as Goldman Sachs saying that they expect the 10 oil trains going through a day to increase to 15 in 2014.
Is this nationally or in La Crosse?
That's a national figure. And we know that BNSF is putting a lot of money into track improvement to increase capacity. So, like the mayor said, it makes sense that this is more than just getting the same number of trains going through. And there'll be fluctuations in the market and business practices and so forth.
So why is it a safety issue to have more trains running through La Crosse on any given day? Mayor, you talked about, and probably anyone who lives in La Crosse knows, that you can get held up at the train stops, you know, trying to get through to that area underneath the bluffs there. But how does that relate to safety concerns?
Well, I think it gets back to the fact that just a few years ago, the amount of oil that was transported via rail was a fraction of what it is today. And they're utilizing these 111 tank cars that are very aged. They, in essence, are old technology. So if there is a derailment or if cars, you know, leave the tracks, they're much more likely to be punctured, to spill. And then, as you know, we've seen in North Dakota and Montreal and other places, it's a worry that there would be a catastrophic fire associated with that.
Like the probability's higher.
Exactly. And again, I think, you know, we heard from BNSF when they were here in La Crosse the last time that, you know, it's well over 99% of what they transport is safely done. And I think that's important so that it's not a panic. But the situation that I see is that this very rapid ramp up to ship all of the oil via rail cars using old technology makes me concerned that anytime you're in a hurry up, catch up mode, mistakes happen. And in this case, a mistake could be, very, very traumatic for a community. That's one of the things I think that's just different than what we have seen in the past. There's more oil being transported every day, and it's being transported in cars that are not safe. And we've really pushed, and this is a federal issue, this is where we've really tried to work with our federal legislators and state legislators to, in essence, either phase out or put some sort of a moratorium on the use of these 111 cars. Again, that's very difficult because of the numbers that are out there. I think I heard some report that there's maybe 90,000 of these types of cars that are in use right now. But there's a new car, the 1232, I think it's what it's called, that has the double hull and has these safety mechanisms in place. So if there would be a derailment, they're much less likely to puncture and spill and all that. So that to me is a huge step. I know that between the federal regulatory agencies and the railroad, I mean, people are recognizing this as a big issue. But again, I think it needs to happen quickly because of the amount of rail that's being transported. So it's and for us here, this has to tie it back to La Crosse is the regional hazardous material response team. And so we basically have to cover an area from Prairie du Chien up to Trempealeau. And the state, unfortunately, the last several years has been reducing the amount of resources that it provides to our fire department to do that. And I think, Maureen had mentioned earlier about the need for additional spill booms, the need for the foam that is actually used to stop the fires. We have a very significant need. The railroad has provided training to our firefighters, and that will continue. But again, we're talking about a very small issue, two or three cars versus what we've seen in other places, which are multiple cars. And we just don't have the materials to deal with that right now.
And I think Fire Chief Cleveland has also said that, yes, they could use many more materials to deal with this.
That's correct.
What about would the city have to change maybe its emergency evacuation plans or figure out ways to get emergency vehicles from one side of the track to the others if the second line does come through?
We are looking at that as well. Our emergency responders are reviewing those types of plans all the time. So if there is something that happens, to a particular crossing, what are the alternatives? The second track, again, I think with the crossings that we have, the short answer I can give you is there will be changes, and our fire departments are looking at that all the time as a part of their response. I think the bigger issue and what we learned is that in the time, say that you would, God forbid, have a terrible fire or derailment or whatever that involved multiple cars, they really looked to the local level to deal with that situation for up to 72 hours. So for 3 days, it would be our crews trying to deal with that by the time you would get, federal response, FEMA and others to come in on the outside. And so, again, we just don't have the amount of foam, the spill booms, the personnel. You'd be pulling, assistance from a large area if you had something that they've seen out west or, that happened up in Quebec. So it's, again, that's what local governments have to do. You have to obviously prepare for the worst and hope for the best. But in this case, our hazardous response teams, the funding has been cut. Again, you're trying to operate on a very tight budget. And in this case, safety comes first. So you have to find the resources to be able to do that.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about freight train traffic in the La Crosse area. My guests are La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot and La Crosse County Board Supervisor Maureen Friedland. Maureen, did you want to touch on the safety issue also?
Yes, I'd like to add that the local responders are required to respond, but they don't have a lot of control over the facts that they're responding to. They don't necessarily know what's coming through. They don't have the materials, as the mayor said. In Castleton, North Dakota, at the fire that they had there, it took several days for the hazmat responders from Arkansas to get to North Dakota with the proper equipment that they needed. So we can do evacuation plans, and we know that our county people are working hard at that. The problem is that evacuation plans don't necessarily work when you have an intense situation going on. We had one person who came to a county meeting who talked about her disabled husband and how was he going to get out. There's only a limited access going out of that neighborhood. How would a disabled person get out? We know that there are some other parts of the city that have only one access out of a neighborhood, and an evacuation plan won't necessarily work. So we do have a lot of concerns about that. And I also wanted to add that we know that that BNSF and the other railroads are concerned about the tank cars that are carrying the crude oil, and they're looking to get improvements on that. The problem is that we have so many cars that are on the rails now that are deemed to be deficient, and they've been deemed to be deficient for the last 20 years, and the progress doesn't seem to be very quick. And in the meantime, we're looking at laying more rail when we have unsafe trains that are going through. People don't think about explosions or derailments. I've enjoyed the trains going through our area, but the safety concerns over the last few years have gotten very, very intense, and the situation is different now.
What about aesthetically? Mayor, I think in the past when we've talked about this, you said that there's some concerns with how this could affect neighborhoods, because there's some pretty high-valued homes in that area where the train goes through.
There's a need to try to mitigate some of those impacts as much as we can with the increased traffic and with the second line. I would like to be able to, you know, look at options for, again, to try to lessen the amount of noise, lessen the vibrations. Maureen had said earlier about, the rail beds and some of the infrastructure, and making sure that that's as progressive as possible to reduce the amount of vibrations. But I think if we look at, landscaping and berming in some cases, folks have mentioned to me, well, what about, you see on the interstate some of those sound deadening walls that get put up next to neighborhoods. And in this case, I think those are some the right ideas, and we need to be having those kinds of discussions. But I think it would be very difficult to try to wall off certain parts of the neighborhoods from the railroad tracks, just because, as you said, and I think so many communities have developed right close to the railroad tracks. So I think that we're going to have to look at more landscaping and natural berming and those types of things to try to, again, reduce the noise and reduce some of those things as best as we can. And I live a block away from the railroad. I knew what I was getting into as well. But when I moved into my house over 10 years ago, there was fewer trains. And again, I think anybody knows that there are times when the railroad ships hazardous materials, but the fact that we've seen a 400% increase in just the amount of oil, again, gets back to the notion that the situation is different today than it was a few years ago.
Maureen?
Yes, I want to add that we're concerned about the entire length of the tracks and not just the area of the double tracks. One of the things that we would love to see that we want to see is an environmental impact statement that would, for example, take into consideration the manufactured homes that are in the south part of the city. This isn't just about the double track area that's going to be expanded, but directing attention to that, we've seen some figures that indicate that we have a larger number of the homes in the city that are part of the higher tax base in that area. So it is of concern to us to be concerned about those particular homes, because that's an area of the city that is well regarded, well preserved now, and we don't want to take chances with the tax base if people aren't going to be willing to live within that half a mile of the railroad tracks. So we're concerned about the double area, but we're also concerned about the entire length and the entire distance, no matter what the value of the homes are.
BNSF says they would hope to have this second line constructed by next year, 2015. What do you anticipate will happen in the meantime? Do you think that this second track is a done deal? What do you want to see happen?
Well, I think, again, we're preparing as if that second line is going to be constructed. And part of really what I guess I'm hoping to do from a city operations standpoint, outside of the neighborhood issues, which are very critical, and that's also part of what we're trying to put together for information, is, again, just those items. I touched on a few of them. You know, not only the golf course and the access to the trailhead for Hickson Forest and just what happens there. We also have over 30 utility crossings that will be impacted by the construction of the second line. And what is the scope of those, you know, water, sewer, storm sewer crossings and you know, what's going to be potentially the cost of having to do something with those if they have to be moved or changed in any way. I mean, those are going to be some very significant issues for city taxpayers. And again, back to the emergency response and having the appropriate resources. So what really we're trying to do is to get really the full idea of possible impacts with that second line and be able to, you know, sit down with the railroad and sit down with neighbors to, you know, to show them here's the impacts and then how do we try to address them.
Maureen?
I have hope that a full environmental impact statement will be done, although BNSF has told us that there isn't the requirement to do that. We know that there'll be an environmental assessment, but we want a full environmental impact statement done that considers factors such as the delay at crossings, the effect on cemeteries, the effect on the marsh habitat, and so forth, vibration. And I would also like to have a discussion, more of a discussion, of the speed limits, reducing and controlling speed limits. BNSF has informed us that it's federal regulations that apply, but I'm not quite sure that there isn't some discretionary reduction in speed limit that could take place. We have research that shows that oil trains need to move at slower speeds, especially through urban areas. And we'd like to have more clarity on what's going to happen with the marsh issues before this goes forward. And we'd like to have more help with the resources for combating disasters that the mayor talked about, assurances for better track quality. We'd like to know more about the inspections that take place. There's very limited inspection on the rail lines that take place. There's only 50 federal inspectors for the entire country, and the number of state inspectors is very, very, very small also. So we would like to see these answers before the construction takes place.
Maureen Friedland is a La Crosse County Board supervisor, and Tim Cabot is La Crosse's mayor. Today, we're talking about freight train traffic in the La Crosse area. Someone from BNSF was invited to talk about the company's expansion plans, but turned down the offer. Coming up next, we'll continue our discussion on freight railroads and look at their economic impact in the region. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum.